And I played, and then I had a chat with these guys over some tacos and some beers. And they were like the brightest people I'd ever had a chat with, you know. They blew my mind, like the things they were saying. And they were a few years younger than me, and they were like way ahead. And one of the things they said was, you know, neurologically, we're not prepared as humans to deal with being in constant contact with everybody that we've ever met. You know, it's just way too much for our little neurons. And we're also, for the first time in our history as humankind, facing the third ego, which I'd never heard about. Like the first ego is what you think of yourself. Second is how people perceive you. And the third ego is your...
You're listening to the Frio Music Podcast.
And all our history, it shouldn't matter. It still has a strong grip on my shoulder. Is it your hand or mine or both together? You can't face the past because it's behind you. But you can stare starry-eyed into the future. Oh.
My name's Tiago Saga, and my project's called Time for Tea. Just the letter T, which was a silly name that I came up with about 10 years ago, and then it kind of stuck.
Any origin story? How'd you come up with it?
Well, in Portugal, Tiago is a kind of a normal, very common name, and then in England, everyone would say, oh, Diego or Tiger or whatever. So people just started calling me T. And then I just thought it'd be like very stupid kind of English sounding joke of calling it Time for Tea, just a letter T. And then it stuck. Yeah. And then, yeah.
Nice.
It's very hard to Google though.
I like it. Well, somehow I found your music. So, yeah. So it is discoverable. So time for you if I were to in translate very, it, you know, in,
yeah,
in
sounds
a way.
Very egocentric, but it wasn't. I mean, it did start off as a solo project, and I had a band just before, and then it was like a new project on my own. But it was kind of a joke. I didn't think, oh, it's time for Tiago, whatever. It's just people called me T, and it just kind of made sense at the time. But then when the band joined, we kept it going with the same name.
So backing up to your youth, or when did you first get introduced to music, and when were you starting to get curious about the creation process?
I think I was into music from a very early age. Like my dad always, he's an artist, but he's not a musician, but he always had music blaring in the workshop. My mother also is an artist, and they used to work together. And I always remember like loud music on in the house, and it giving me this very primal, beautiful feeling. And I remember like listening to Bob Dylan, and it was just as soon as you could record cassettes, when I discovered how to record cassettes, I recorded like a Rolling Stone on the cassette, like repeatedly from the first side to the second side, because it just gave me this feeling of, I don't know, this made me feel really good as a kid, and I didn't even know what he was singing about. So I guess that was around five, six years old.
And you were just looping it?
Because I just loved that song. And I
would, just get into it.
I wanted to hear that song again and again. Because back in the day with tape, you'd have to, after every song, you'd have to kind of rewind and hit the right moment, you know. It was just a way of listening to it again and again and again. And then I got my first guitar at the age of 14. And from then on, as soon as I kind of learned a few chords, I started writing and singing. Singing came a little bit later, but that was more due to necessity, because we had a band and we were looking for a singer, and we could never find one. And then one day I just plugged in a little microphone into... Luckily, I had an amp that had two inputs. If it hadn't had two inputs, I don't know, maybe I would never have sung. But I remember just saying, ah, it's got another input. Let's try a mic in there. And I started kind of screaming down the mic and it sounded kind of cool. So we were like, okay, let's try this for a while. Maybe you can be the singer. And then I just fell in love with singing. And then I kind of took over guitar playing and everything else for that matter.
And when you were initially writing, you said before you got into singing, was it writing for the guitar? And what were you writing, tabs, or do you write
music?
Yeah,
I was kind of writing like little instrumentals, and also singing a little bit, but really badly, so badly that I thought, you know, I'm never going to be a singer, but maybe someone else can sing this song. But like really shockingly bad. when I hear some recordings now, I'm like, wow, how did I, you know, some people are just.
But at the time, did you know it was bad at the time?
Yeah. 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 I knew it was bad. And even my mom, who's like normally super supportive, you know, Like in English, we have the expression that the sun shines out of my ass, you know? So everything I did was like, wow. But then when I started singing and playing guitar, she's like, maybe just stick to the guitar. Yeah. So, and my sister was born with, you know, some people are just born with a great voice. They can sort of, they can do all the sort of the scales and the things like very naturally without much effort. But I was definitely not one of those.
So what was it? Was it the feeling that gave you the underlying desire to continue singing? Like, why'd you continue on that path if you knew that there was like a gap between where you wanted to be, where you were? And even other people were not giving you encouragement. What was it that got you over that limiting self-doubt?
I think it was because I have quite a particular voice. It's not like it has a certain timbre that's not that usual or maybe that easy. And once I kind of, for want of a better word, dominated that, I kind of got confidence in just releasing it. And then people started going, hey, actually, you sound kind of interesting and cool. It sounds kind of different. You know, it's not the usual thing. And yeah, I remember actually, like, it was the one kind of music festival where we were all sitting around the classic, you know, sitting around the fire and the guitar was being passed around. And all of a sudden, I was singing a song and everyone was singing with me. And I was like, wow, this is really powerful, it's really cool to be able to whip out the guitar and change the atmosphere of the whole group, you know. I kind of realized, I knew it had the power for me, but I didn't realize it had the power for those around me as well. And I guess that got me really addicted to singing in public as well and feeling more comfortable with the idea.
So is that kind of casual environment that gave you the permission to pick it up and to let it loose? And then you realize that it actually had resonance among other people.
Yeah. And then I started singing my own songs. And I mean, I don't know if anyone, even if you're not a singer per se, everyone sings once in a while, whether it's in the car, you know, alongside one of their tunes or their favorite tunes or in the shower or whatever. But it's a real release. It's a very primal release to sing. And when you start singing and things actually start making sense and it kind of sounds good and you're singing about your stuff that's inside you, in the depths of your subconscious or even conscious, it's a hell of a release. It's like a very addictive feeling to get it all off your chest. And as a teenager, I think it was an extremely important tool as an outlet, you know, as a way to get things out. And also to create a community around music and to enter a community of musicians was always really a magical part for me. Because wherever you go in the world, if you're a musician, you kind of know that you have a little family in every town you head to, whatever. You know that if you meet the right people, you'll be welcomed. And it's a really beautiful camaraderie, you know.
I wonder if you would be willing to speak to a little bit more why it is such an important outlet, as you said, as a teenager or as a kid, and why you felt like that was maybe therapeutic or helpful for you.
I think because when you're a teenager, you're kind of trying to find your place, right? You're trying to find your clan. You're trying to find yourself, and it's your hormones are all over the place, and you kind of, one minute everything's great, and the next minute everything's messed up. And I guess it was one thread, that kind of common thread that kept going throughout, and it was always a safe space, if you like. And I think it also gives you a sense of identity. I think without music, I didn't have much else. I mean, I used to really like playing football, soccer, as you call it, you guys call it there. But I was, you know, my dream was to be a professional football player, but deep down I knew I was rubbish, you know. So then when I got music, I was like, even if I am rubbish, it still feels really good. And it feels like I can have an impact on people. Whereas with football, it felt good, but I couldn't really have an impact on people. And I think that becomes quite an addictive thing. When I say impact, I also mean just bringing people together, you know, like giving an excuse for your friends to come to a concert or a jam session or whatever. You kind of find you're really like a sort of family. And they always treated me really well, whichever family it was. So I guess it's really important to go for it. If there's something that makes you feel good, then why not take it seriously and risk a little bit and go for it, you know?
When you started creating music and started singing, what steps did you actively take to find your voice? Because it sounds like you're not trying to force yourself to act like or to perform like somebody else, and you're kind of embracing your unique timbre, as you said. So I'm curious, what maybe were the initial steps about finding your voice, embracing it, and then improving and leveling up?
I guess it was physiological in one way, like where you're a teenager and your voice is like all over the place. And then I was reaching, I could reach quite high notes by screaming, you know, by like, and now my voice has changed. Like I sing in a much more relaxed way, and I'm really enjoying the sort of more the middles and the sort of the low mids of my voice rather than the highs, you know?
Yeah. Extremes. Yeah.
And I guess it was just a question of singing a lot, you know, I in the summer, I decided not to get, so at 16, 17, I decided not to work in a bar anymore, cafes in the summer, and I decided to just play shows in the Algarve, which is where I am right now, which is the south of Portugal, which is not culturally a very rich place. So the bar gigs, you get like this kind of cheesy, you know, play Wonderwall kind of gigs. But I did it, and it made me a much better singer because, like, I was singing five times a week for hours, you know. And I also did a bit of busking all around Europe. There was one summer where I bussed all around Europe, and that made me really a much better singer. Like, I all of a sudden I was projecting my voice to it because we were playing totally acoustic, so you had to kind of project it to sound like you deserve a tip. So we were singing loud, you know, and I was singing with a friend of mine who grew up singing in the choir, and he gave me some tips. And then I went to study in university, and there for the first time in my life, I had singing lessons at university. So I did like a songwriting, contemporary composition course at university in England. And then twice a week, we used to do singing class, and that was also a big eye opener. Like I was doing a lot of things wrong, you know, but that's also why I had that voice, because the technique for sure was wrong. I was singing in my throat. But that's why it had that certain sound. So I didn't really change too much.
So the proper way, is it from the diaphragm? I'm just curious. Some of those big
supposedly,
insights.
Yeah. So you got to sing from deep down there. Yeah. From the diaphragm, and your I guess your throat is just a vessel for what the power that's coming from beneath. Whereas I was just like pumping it from here. So I had a lot of throat problems actually. Back then I was smoking a lot of weed as well and drinking and not really looking after my vocal cords. Now I'm like, I do vocal warm-ups before singing and I try and drink like a good liter of water after a gig just to dilute the vocal cords a little bit, keep them happy, keep them humid. Whereas before I'd just be like, you know, cold beer after a gig. And yeah, I mean, it's things that you pick up along the way. And because we used to tour and I would like lose my voice in the first 3 days, you know, I'd be like, sound okay for the first three dates and then kind of bad for the next week and then get it back slowly. So you had to learn to kind of pace your voice a little bit.
And it sounds like that those early days when you're getting those bar gigs and you said you're playing five times a week was really an accelerated learning curve for you, because you got to maybe explore different techniques, get immediate feedback. And were you also learning how to hone your voice at that point, or were you still just belting it, like being loud straight from the throat, partying, were you kind of weaving those insights into your
performance? Yeah, it was kind of instinctive, those bar gigs, but then I went to university and got a little bit better and still did the bar gigs in the summer. For sure, there was a huge leap of like practice for me there. I was like feeling like I could also sing certain songs that I wouldn't have dared to before, you know, like Otis Redding songs. And the Kinks surprisingly have a very high pitch, you know, you have to like reach notes that you don't normally reach if you don't sing often. But yeah, that was like a good kind of hardcore practice, you know.
Were you just forcing yourself to learn new songs? Because I'm sure you didn't want to play the same thing five nights in a row. Yeah. So I'm sure you had to just kind of expand your archive or your repertoire.
For sure. And that's songs. A great way to learn new guitar techniques, new singing techniques, new songwriting techniques. It's like a very good way. In fact, I kind of miss learning other people's songs now because I stopped doing it. I mean, I learned like maybe one cover a year. But back in the day, I was like always constantly looking for more repertoire to learn. And I was also mixing a lot of my originals into the set, which was a little bit rare for the type of bar gigs I was doing. Not many people were doing originals as well. It was also really, like you said earlier, is a very good way to get an instant reaction from the people who were listening. So there would be certain songs that I would see, this actually has a cool impact on people, and other ones that didn't, you know. So, or if I sang it a certain way, it did, and if I didn't, it was a good way of getting a reaction.
Going back, putting yourself in the mentality before even the bar gigs, how did you get those bar gigs? Like, what were some of the steps that you took to get yourself out there and to convince the bar owners that, you should definitely come back, like, again and again and again?
That's a good question. I think some of those bar gigs, I kind of would get invited by other musicians who were playing to play a song or two. And then either the bar or the venue owner would say, hey, if you want to come and play next week, come and play. Or I would message them and say, hey, I played last week, and how would you feel if I play the whole set next week or whatever? And then it kind of goes word of mouth. Back then it wasn't so online. It was more, I mean, what am I talking? It's like 2009, 2010. So there was MySpace and things like that, but it wasn't like, you know, hey, listen to my SoundCloud. It was like more word of mouth, you know. And I didn't have really anything recorded because it wasn't so easy to record as it is now. You know, you had to kind of know someone who had a studio who could record something. Or even, I mean, nowadays you can get a pretty good sound quality from your phone. You can just record a video and people kind of know what they're going to get. But back then it was really, you know, you had the Nokias and it was like the whole other thing. I sound so old. God.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's, music is definitely at the cutting edge and is pushing things forward. And so given that you've seen many technologies come and go, what maybe do you think has been unlocked by the passage of time? What is currently possible that was before maybe hard to do or prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, you can kind of buy a studio for like a studio, I say, I don't know, like a way of recording that doesn't sound rubbish for $300, you know, a computer, a second-hand computer, and a cracked program, you know, what do they call DAWs, whatever, the digital audio workstation, yep, whatever, and a mic and a couple of cables, and you're ready to go. So I think that's for sure progressed a lot of people. I think it's made possible that a lot of people could record that would never have the possibility to record before. I'm a firm believer that some of the best songs in the world were never heard, you know, they were never recorded. And even now, I'm sure there's like some amazing musicians. I even know a few, you know, amazing songs that have never been properly recorded and put out into the world. It's like I have friends who used to take music really seriously, and they wrote some of the best songs I've ever heard, but they never really immortalized the song in the way it should have, I thought, anyway. So I think there's also the pros and cons, like in anything. I also think there's a lot of people recording music and putting it out there that maybe the quality isn't that good, and it's hard to kind of sift through the sea of so much information to get to the good stuff. But I'm also a believer that if it's good, people will notice.
It'll rise
people
up.
Will notice. And
yeah,
I don't know. I think also creatively, it's a whole other thing having, you know, a lot of songwriters nowadays are also producers. They're also producing their own music, which is kind of a novelty, because back in the day you would have kind of a producer, and then you'd have the songwriter, and then you'd even have the artist. So nowadays everyone kind of does everything. So for sure that contributes to a larger variety in sounds and aesthetics, you know.
So how have you taken that approach when it comes down to recording and immortalizing the song, as you said? Do you like to work with a producer or somebody else in the studio, or do you like to have your hands on the whole process?
A bit of both. I've worked with a few producers that I really admire, and where you feel like their input is enriching. And then I've also worked with some that's like, actually, I think we could do this better without you, you know. But that's a very personal thing. And I'm a little bit of a control freak with sound and with my songs, and I get a little bit possessive maybe, and sometimes it's hard to kind of, I see them as a little bit like my babies, you know, and that sometimes when you don't mind giving your baby to a good parent, another parent who is going to look after them, but then if you can see that they're a bit reckless or they don't really give a damn about your baby, then you don't want to give it. So, but for sure, I think it's a really cool, I think some of the best albums made were all when the producer and the artist clicked, you know. I don't think it's when the artist produced himself, or I think it's normally has to be that kind of beautiful. And if you can get that momentum going between two creative camps, if you like, it can be really, you can reach places that you couldn't reach on your own. And I think then it can be really productive and enriching.
And have there been any collaborations that you've done that have kind of found that synergy that you're discussing?
I think a producer we worked with when we were quite a young band, and he'd worked with quite a few artists that we like. He's called Tim Bidwell. He's a lovely Scottish guy who lives in England. And he kind of took our sound to the next level. I thought he kind of saw that we had, he kind of enriched, he amplified certain aspects of our sound, and it made the sound for the first time maybe a bit more cohesive, a little bit more like you could hear the first song to the last song on the EP and it sounded like the same band, whereas before we were like, let's do a West African song. Hey, let's do a reggae song, and then we'd kind of produce it the same way as you would each genre. And he was the first guy that kind of said, look guys, let's get a few textures that we want to repeat throughout the album, and you can change the beats, you can change the genres, but let's keep the same textures. And that was really cool. That was like also made us realize that it's really good to have someone a little bit older, a bit more experienced on board that can kind of rein you in.
Yeah, and when you discuss those like kind of commonality textures, as you said, if you could describe what that means a little bit more, you know, what is the texture that is common between two different songs?
Yeah, I guess it's like a certain sound of a keyboard, you know, like a certain keyboard that you don't listen to in every song, but it pops up here and there throughout the whole album, or a certain effect on the vocal, or like a technique to record the guitars. It all has a certain atmosphere, you know, and the drums are huge. It's a huge thing. If you put like a couple of dBs more volume on the drums, it changes the album. And some songs deserve like a certain drum sound and other ones don't, and it's kind of like I guess the texture is like a common thread going throughout the album, which can be anything from strings to horns or to backing vocals. Like, you know, throughout the whole album, we're going to have backing vocals, female backing vocals come in most choruses. And then it kind of unifies the whole album.
That's very interesting that you're able to blend in a way the songs into a cohesive whole, which is the album, which is kind of an art form in itself that you know, in the digital age, seems like kind of tracks are frequently standalone, but those albums that actually have the feeling where you want to play it in order from start to finish, that's unique. And I appreciate you illustrating a little bit about how you could take the keyboards and maybe have it featured in the same way, or just even the mic technique. I appreciate all those suggestions. Yeah. And ideas about how to take a different song but have elements of the same recording process in it. So that's cool.
Yeah, it's also really cool to like mess around with it. Like there's one song that you want to have loads of slap back on the vocal, which maybe doesn't suit all the songs, but this one particular song sounds really cool with the slap back. It takes a little bit of guts also to go, all right, here we go. Let's put it on this one song.
You're going to break the rule. So, yeah.
But then you have the danger of it sounding a little bit alone amongst the other songs, which could also be cool. Sometimes you want to you know, focus on one song or whatever.
Yeah, well, let's do focus on a song for now. I'd love to talk about Fire on the Mountain.
We're all so uneasy in our comfortable little bubbles, algorithms tailored for our soul. And we're all just a cigarette away from rolling the next one. Now I'm just so tired of the way things are. I'm too tired to do anything. Maybe tomorrow I'll make a change, but for now I'll do some bad preaching. Oh, hashtag first world problems. Oh, swimming in your pocket with the easy jet generation, but there ain't nothing easy about this.
And I feel like there's like an old spiritual feel to it. And this is just my vocabulary, my own interpretation of it. But it has this kind of old-timey feel to it. And I'm curious, what was the inspiration on your end and how did you create that song?
Yeah, I think that the more spiritual thing you were saying, and it's kind of got these like little gospel backing vocals throughout the verses, which was a really cool addition from some friends of ours from Madrid who we invited to sing on. But that song turned up because of the wildfires, as simple as that. There's been really bad problems, just as there is in the States, and there's going to be more and more throughout the world. But in Portugal, we have really bad wildfires. a bunch of my friends lost their houses and everything to these fires, and it really created an impact on me. And I remember going to the beach. So I was also a culprit, but I remember going to the beach and being there, and I saw this huge like mushroom of smoke in the distance. And the people were on their lounge chairs taking selfies and drinking pina coladas. And I was like, it's such a weird paradox, you know, where we're all here together, but we're all, you know, one person's losing their house and the other person is on holiday. And it's kind of a weird juxtaposition. And I was just like, I'm just so tired of the way things are, but I'm too tired to do anything. So that was the song that kind of popped out like that. And then it was also this, it's kind of a very ironic taking the piss song, you know, of, I think the chorus goes, hashtag first world problems, all swimming in my pocket. So it's like all these little notifications you get on your phone and you think is a big problem. And then we're the easy jet generation, but there's nothing easy about it, you know. We're totally lost. Our priorities are like totally messed up. And I wanted to sing about that. I thought, and when I was recording that song, believe it or not, so I recorded that EP during the pandemic in the caravan in the woods. And there was a huge fire that broke out like in the next valley, and we had to be evacuated. So I was actually evacuated of the recording studio, if you like, while I was recording that song. And then we decided to do the music video in these burnt fields, because it was like, I mean, it was just too good to ignore that. And so we just put like people on holiday, but in the middle of these burnt fields. And that was cool. I think they got quite a nice reaction, and people were like, yeah, it is ridiculous. We should all be a little bit more aware about it and do our part, you know. I don't know how it is in California or in the States, but in Portugal, it's because of the eucalyptus tree. There's like huge eucalyptus tree monoculture here, and it's not a native plant, and it kind of just dries everything and it lights like petrol, you know. So they thrive in fire. So the seeds, they hatch above 50 degrees. So whenever there's a fire in the eucalyptus forest, it's like a couple of months later, there's all these little green shoots popping out, you know. So it's kind of like the devil. But it's also one of the biggest forms of making cash here in Portugal. So I don't know. It's a weird one. But that's, yeah, basically the song popped out of pure necessity of singing about it.
Yeah, well, the way you painted that story and the juxtaposition is so striking. That juxtaposition between, you know, somebody just chilling, enjoying, sipping their drink, and somebody else, you know, scrambling to like get their, you know, sentimental things out of their house before it burns. And it's all happening simultaneously. It's very interesting. That approach that you've taken, and I feel like there's a commonality too, that you're discussing things that I feel like are frequently experienced but are frequently not said, and like the problems in your pocket, you know, the notifications in your phone, and there's another track, Screenshot, that I feel like has that similar thread, so I want to talk about that one.
Why would you cut the story short when it's all the finer details that make the story good? Good job you backed up all those memories. Now they'll be floating in the clouds for the next century. You're shaking all my dreams. Shaking all my dreams, shaking all my dreams, oh. How do you know how it feels when it's face down? Are you looking up, lying around right now?
So what was the meaning and Why did you create that song?
That was, yeah, like you just hit the nail on the head. That was literally just being on the metro and looking around and thinking, wow, no one looks at each other anymore, you know? And I'm one of them, like totally also victim of this thing. Yeah, yeah, everyone's just, every spare second you get, your muscle memory just puts your hand right in your pocket and grabs your phone. And there's no, like, I don't know, savoring the moment anymore. It's all, and even when you're on your phone, you're kind of organizing the next week and everything's chock-a-block and everything. There's no gaps anymore. And I think that the gaps are really important. And kids, you know, I also see kids on the phone and on their iPads and things like that. And I don't want to say that how people should bring up their kids, but damn, it's like these kids need to be in the mud and they need to be falling down in the street and they need to be playing with other kids or teasing the older people or whatever. Like, it's, everyone's just a little bit too hypnotized by the screen. And that was it. That was like, you know, and it just came out as a bit of a silly, like a lot of my lyrics are, they start off as a bit of a joke, you know, like they're kind of ironic. If I screenshot my life right now, would it be worth the backup on the iCloud? It's like, I never thought I would actually use it, but then it kind of, I thought it sounded too silly to not use, so we used it. Yeah, it's basically about that, about having to kind of rip our gaze off the phone and try and be aware of what's going on around us, which we also tried to highlight in the music video. That was a really fun music video to do because we just had to like ask friends and strangers to do random things while looking at their phone, which is what people do anyway. So it was kind of an easy music video to make.
Well, I appreciate that you are bringing light to something that is just so obvious. Everybody rides public transportation or, you know, waits in line at a coffee shop. You know, everybody's doing the same thing. And it's very strange how much of our lives has become captured digital things like this video. Yeah. You know, here's a good example, right? So right now we're living, hopefully, at least we think we are. I don't know about simulation theory and stuff, but regardless, you know, we're living, but boom, it becomes a digital thing. And now it's going to be consumed on other people's devices. And some of you are probably watching this on your phone in your hand right now. Look up, watch out. Something's coming at you. You know, life is here. So it is interesting that we're all kind of so immersed in it. And of course, I'm just as guilty as anybody. You know, I've got lots of screens and devices. But it is something that's a big notable change in our culture. And you just wonder, you know, like, well, I previously lived in an apartment building and it's like I barely knew the people there. And it's like, we live so close to each other. We live literally on top of each other. You know, like, why didn't we at least know the other person's name? You know, it's very strange. Everybody's like so closed in on their doors, but happen to be COVID times too. But
yeah, there's this kind of like feeling of everyone's so connected, but are we, you know, are we really connected? And I actually had a really interesting, it sounds really pretentious when I say it, but I played a really interesting gig in LA once, and I was like one of those random gigs where I was traveling through and I just said, hey, I'm going to be in LA these days. Anyone know of a show? And these guys from the Cognitive Science Student Association of the UCLA said, yeah, we dig your songs, man. Like, it would be a pleasure. Come and play at our... it wasn't a house. It was like some kind of student association, you know. And I played, and then I had a chat with these guys over some tacos and some beers, and they were like the brightest people I'd ever had a chat with, you know. They blew my mind. It was like the things they were saying, and they were a few years younger than me, and they were like way ahead. And one of the things they said was, you know, neurologically, we're not prepared as humans to deal with being in constant contact with everybody that we've ever met. You know, it's just way too much for our little for our little neurons. And we're also, for the first time in our history as humankind, facing the third ego, which I'd never heard about. Like the first ego is what you think of yourself. Second is what, how people perceive you. And the third ego is your social media ego. And all the dopamine that comes with that, and how, you know, you can actually be having a great day and then you post something and it doesn't get many likes and it kind of changes your vibe, you know, and it's like so ridiculous. That also made me really think, like, this little thing in our pocket, because I don't know how old you are, but I'm still, how old are you?
33.
I'm 1 year younger than you, so we're still part of the generation of that transition between not having internet and having internet, you know, and having mobile phones. And I remember being a kid and my dad said, hey, we're going to go and see the internet now. My friend's got the internet. And nowadays kids are just like,
that's cool.
Road trip. It was like that. It's like, and I remember having a little piece of paper with all the websites I liked, you know, because it was before Google. Search engines.
MapQuest. Remember printing out directions?
And I mean, I'm not saying it's better or worse. In fact, a lot of the kids I meet now are like, I'm surprised at how switched on and how bright, like, and informed they are, you know, because for sure, yeah, they've got like an encyclopedia in their pocket all the time. But I do sometimes think that we're losing touch with the old reality, which might not even be, it's a different reality, I guess. But we could talk about that for days, you know.
Yeah, well, it is interesting. And you, as an artist, have to find a balance, because you have to put yourself out there, unless you just want to play, you know, your local corner bar forever, which is a choice that somebody can make. But in order for you to put yourself out there, you've got to have images, you have to have audio files, profiles, things like that. How do you find the balance between being moving forward on the live front and then also moving forward on the digital front? Like,
yeah. I mean, for sure, that you got to be present all the time, and you got to be feeding the beast, feeding the animal of the social media, and I don't mind it to an extent. I don't think I'm very good at it, and I really like artists that don't give a damn about that. You know, like Joanna Newsom. You know, her music's not even on Spotify.
No, I don't think so.
She was huge. She is huge. She's like legend, you know, in her own kind of circle. But it's really brave to not put your music on Spotify nowadays and to not have an Instagram account. Yeah. She's like, it's so brave that I think it's like the next step of cool. But also, I have to admit that it's amazing that we're having this chat right now and we're talking about this. I think you discovered our music on Spotify, and a lot of people did. Like, a lot of people that come to our shows in the middle of Germany, like in a funny little town I've never even heard of, and the place is full because of Spotify. You know, people listened to one of our songs, liked it, and then realized, hey, a little notification comes up that we're playing close. So it's also really helpful, like, for sure. I can't imagine like touring without the internet, you know, like where you just have to trust that the promoter there has made the cool poster and put it in enough places for people to come to the show, or the local radio station is actually playing the music, or so the people would come to the show. Because nowadays you can kind of see where to go on Spotify. You can see, okay, this town here, listen, there's 300 monthly listeners, so if we go there, we'll probably be okay. Which is a miracle in a way, you know. It's like total game changer for artists, and it's really interesting to see where your music's being listened to. So,
yeah. So you're using the data to make informed decisions, so that you show up, you're going to play to people with very little risk associated with it. You're not going to just jump in the tour van and hope. Yeah. So that's I guess, a benefit of all of these platforms, and that everything's quantified. Of course, you know, you could beat yourself up over those same quantities and just say, why isn't it something else? Why isn't my page like that guy's page or whatever? So it is a balance there.
Yeah.
I want to ask, if somebody approached you today and was a young musician starting out, talented, what advice would you give them?
I guess the advice I try and give myself, and therefore it's the thing that I always come back to that I makes me keep going, is remember why you started. You know, remember why you fell in love with playing music. That feeling, don't forget that feeling, because that's the main thing. That's the main importance of it. That makes you feel good and can hopefully make other people feel good. But if it doesn't, and it just makes you feel good, that's totally a bonus, and that's totally a beautiful thing. So don't get too lost in being successful or doing what you other people think you should do or whatever. Just make yourself happy doing music, and remember why you started. That's basically my recommendation.
Nice. When are you most creative? Night, morning?
Just before sleeping. At the most awkward time. Which is like, I think I need to go to the other room and play some music. And then it's, just as the subconscious is kind of creeping in, that's when I feel most, the brain juice is kind of loosened up and it's flowing a bit better. And then sometimes, like, I love going to a gig, like a really good gig, and coming back home and being inspired by that, and not stealing their style or stealing their ideas, but being inspired by a certain atmosphere that they created. And that's normally at night as well.
Do you take a very consistent approach when you are creating new music? Like, do you show up every day, you know, right before you're going to bed? Or do you kind of work in waves?
Yeah, I totally work in waves. It's very instinctive. It's not, I mean, for sure, sometimes I'm like, damn, I need to finish. At least there are two separate parts of writing for me. There's the magical moment where something just pops out, and normally they are remained unfinished for a long time. And then there's the second part, which is slightly more laborious, which is finishing the song and getting a lyrics that for me makes sense, and that there's a narrative, or and then eventually immortalizing the song, which I think is, at least for me, a very good way of like, okay, that song's finished. Because I find it very hard to say a song is finished. I think once you record it and put it out, it's kind of like, okay, that's the song, you know.
So it's finished once you hit the publish button.
A little bit like that, or at least master the song after it's been mixed and recorded. And then live, there'll be like parts that I'll change, and I think, damn, I should have recorded it with this different part, with this new change. But you can't keep, you know, going back all the time. You need to move forward. So there are a lot of songwriters that, so for the second part, like I was saying, for the finishing of the song, I sometimes have to like go, okay, in the next month, in that week, I really want to try and finish those songs. But sometimes I need a little pressure of like, we're heading to the studio and the song's not finished. Damn, let's finish the song. So that's a really good kind of positive pressure. But there are lots of songwriters that I adore, like, you know, Nick Cave and Randy Newman. They go religiously to the office and write every day. And they're amazing. Like, they write amazing songs. And then there's songwriters like Neil Young who are like, I only write when it comes out naturally, man. You know, so, and I love his songs. So there's no right or wrong way in that sense. It's very free.
Well, I think you basically answered it, but when do you know a song's done? So
yeah, when it's, I think when once it's recorded. And it would be very annoying for everyone to redo it again.
So when the pain becomes too great to redo it or to go back. Okay. Good. So there's one final track I want to get to, and then we'll wrap it up. Sun on My Back.
Back, I'm good, but in the meantime,
it's a really light, uplifting track. It's kind of got this upbeat guitar. On your music, when you're recording it, obviously it's your vocals, your guitar. What else are you putting into it? Are you how much are you putting your hands on things? On the drum.
Yeah, like I try. I mean, I'm lucky enough to play with guys that have generally really good music taste, or at least, in my opinion, good music taste. So if I bring a song in and we start jamming it and it kind of just feels right straight away, that's the beautiful time. Sometimes it's a bit more laborious and we kind of have to go back, and then we realize that the song sounds shit, and then we start it all over again. And then you kind of forget about the song for a few months, and then one day you play it again and it just clicks, you know? So that song is so simple that it really required the simple instrumentation, and we wanted to kind of give the feeling that we were driving down a long, windy road in a nice Cadillac. And yeah, with the sun on your back, not in your face. On your back, you know, which is actually really, it's warming and easy. It's not like
you're not blinded, trying to avoid the oncoming traffic. Yeah, that's good. So it's a warming. So you mentally put yourselves there when you're writing and creating.
Sure, yeah.
It.
And we actually recorded that song live, so we were all playing all those instruments that are recorded.
Simultaneously,
yeah, we it was one of the few songs on the album that we kept everything from the live take, and I redid my vocals, but apart from that, yeah, it's all live, and I'm no click track or anything, so it's kind of like very jammy, very natural, and I really like that. It's one of the songs that on the new album that for me, if I wasn't part of the band, I would listen to and think, this band's kind of cool, you know.
Yeah, it definitely has a distinct feel to it. So were you all in like isolation booths, like looking at each other?
No, we were actually all in the same room, but we had like isolated sound to an extent. There's a little bit of bleed, but
yeah,
we were in this really cool studio in Germany, in Frankfurt. And we were all looking at each other, in a circle, playing the whole album we did like that. And then some songs we kind of kept some things, and then other ones we just kept the drums and bass. But we wanted it to have that kind of groove, because we did a few songs with click tracks in the past, and they work, but it's like it kind of loses a little bit of the natural magic. And for this album, we were like,
it's like too quantized. Yeah.
It's really useful if the song's not finished and you want to like kind of finish it. We did that also, and I like the result. But it's really good because then you can be sort of more of an engineer and kind of map out which part works with which part. And if it's all done to a click track, you can actually stick bits together.
It's easy to cut.
But on this album, we wanted it to have more like, hey, we're a band playing in the room and some mics are set up. You know, so that was, and then the Sun on My Back, the lyrics, I remember reading about the mayfly, which is, I think it's the shortest living being in the world. So it's like a mayfly can be born, procreate and die within 5 minutes. And I remember thinking, wow, my days are so short. I haven't got time to do anything. And then I read that and I was like, wow, that's productivity, you know? And I kind of like turned everything on its head, and I thought it was funny to sing about that.
It's helpful to keep things in perspective. Sometimes you just need a mayfly you know, to make sure that you're not feeling too busy or too absolutely overwhelmed.
I discovered that on my phone.
Yeah. Other than music, what are you into? What lights you up? What gets you excited?
Guy, I sound like a school kid. Friends and family. Friends.
Nice.
Friends, summer family, breaks. Yeah. I love going to watch music other than just playing. I love going to festivals. I love being with people that you love, you know, like people who inspire you and make you feel good and you make them feel good. I recently got back into surfing, which has been really nice. It's been a healthy obsession. I like football. I like food. I also slightly geeky, but there's this game called Settlers of Catan, which me and my family and some friends have started playing, and it's really addictive. In fact, don't even look it up. It's a dangerous path. Yeah, and that's it. Films, cinema. I like anything, really. Anything that makes me feel. Sometimes it's really cool to watch a really shit film as well that just makes you totally zone out. But I think surfing has actually been probably the thing that I like to do the most outside of music in recent times.
That's great. Yeah, it seems like such a healthy, organic activity.
Yeah.
That you're moving your body and you're flowing with nature.
Absolutely.
Literally. So it's very, very beautiful to be out there so in the good. Ocean.
And I'm lucky enough to live in a place so where good. The waves are great and the beaches are beautiful. And you're like, yeah,
take
even
advantage.
In the deep winter, you know, you go out there and it's cold as hell. And you put your wetsuit on and then you're in and you're like, wow. And then all the stuff comes out of your nose and the throat. It's like your body is really happy to be beaten up in the ocean a little bit. You know, I think it's really good for it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, for anybody listening who doesn't already know you, what are the best links and platforms to connect with you?
I think Spotify is pretty good. And we're fairly active on Instagram. We should be more, I mean, but we're kind of getting a bit bored of it. But yeah, Spotify is always good. The YouTube, we've got a lot of music videos. I think we put a bit of effort into our music videos. I think it's a nice way of kind of doing a visual representation of the song. And yeah, Facebook's dead, so they'll go on there.
Well, Tiago, thank you so much for your time. I want to leave you with one more question. And that is open-ended. Anything else that you'd like to share? Anything that's on your mind that we have yet to cover?
I think we had a great chat. I think I really enjoyed talking with you. And I think it's really cool that that we can be from separate continents and still have a common ground and you know, here we are, like I'm at my friend's house talking to you and you're at your house, but it feels like we're in the same headspace in a way. So it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I hope to make it to Denver one day. I've heard really cool things.
Yeah, certainly do. It's worth your time. There's a beautiful outdoor venue called Red Rocks. Always got to plug that.
Yeah. Yeah,
for anybody who doesn't know it yet. It's certainly beautiful. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate you sharing your tips and tricks and wisdom that you've learned over the years and just putting out your music in general. I feel like music brings people together. It brought us together, and I believe it has the power to connect the world. So appreciate you doing your part and putting out your creativity.
Thank you, man. Same to you.
Now let's make some sense of it. My skin is pale. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Frio Music Podcast with Michael Morahan. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell so you don't miss a single episode. And don't forget to share this podcast everywhere. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay tuned.
Listening to Frio Music.